Yo, welcome back to another motherfucking episode of Kill the Mockingbirds. I'm your host, Sean Christ. My partner in crime right next to me, like always.
Riding shotgun as always. Brah, brah. Joel Thomas. We're ready to go. This is going to be a crazy episode. I've been excited about this for the past couple weeks, especially when I learned the topic and Eddie's fire. So I'm pretty excited about this one.
Yeah, and then as our guest today, we got author, documentarist, and the guy that lays the pipe down. You know what I mean? Esoteric Eddie, what's up, man?
What's up? What's up? Glad to be here. Thank you for having me. Namaste.
Yeah, you know, we had to bring you back, man, because you always got that wealth of knowledge that everybody's looking for. I mean, I've been seeing you hit the circuits lately, man. Get seeing you a little bit everywhere. I like to see that, man. And you've been really hammering it home with all the documentaries. But for everybody that may not know who you are, again, can you just kind of refresh everybody some of the material you have and what you've worked on?
Yeah, for sure. So I'm Esoteric Eddie. I'm an author, just dropped a book last December 2021 titled The Lucifer Mystery Revealed. Basically just takes you through an academic journey. And I'm also a YouTuber or a documenter. I've got over 30 videos on my channel, Esoteric Eddie TV. But I've been studying the occult, the esoteric, the conspiratorial for about 15 years now. It's my life has revolved around it ever since I was a kid, really. And it's kind of who I am, just Esoteric Eddie, just author and documenter, among many other things, as Sean alluded to, also a plumber and all kinds of other things.
Jack of all trades, you know what I mean? That's always good, man. You can have he can fix your toilet and break you down what's going on with these elites, you know? All at the same time.
Hell yeah. It's great.
But yeah, you know, your book, I didn't read the book because I'm more of those listener people. That's why I listen to the documentary. Like, that's why I'm glad you do both, because especially like me at work, that's where I digest most of my information. And I thought it was really interesting, the whole aspect of like, you know, when we talked last time, we were talking about like, you know, the Illuminati and how what people think of the Illuminati. And, you know, everybody, you know, thinks, oh, Jay-Z, that's the Illuminati, or this guy's the Illuminati. When you go and back and trace through history, what was what? And that's kind of what this struck with me with the Lucifer mystery, of where it's almost as if it's one of those like rumors where someone goes, you know, and it goes to like the 20th, 1,000th person, and now it's this fact that is not necessarily a fact. So what got you to dig down this rabbit hole,
man? I grew up in a religious family, both Catholic and Christian, so that played a huge part in my life, you know, the Bible, religion. And I grew up heavily believing, you know, that demons and the devil was real in the way that the church portrays it. And but as I continued to learn all this esoteric knowledge and the occult knowledge, then I kind of, those two paths kind of split, you know, and I kind of left the religious aspect of things, still connected to God, but I left the whole religious aspect and started going down the esoteric side of things, the more, you know, historical and factual based type stuff. And all throughout high school, that's when like a lot of this knowledge came to me, and I was reading a lot and watching a lot of videos. But I've gone through a lot, you know, as an artist, as a researcher. I've tried different things before in the past, as far as like trying to get myself out there and trying to get this information out there. I've done it through music. I've done it through graphic design. I've just books and all other YouTube channels that I had before that were failures. So having gone through all of that in my artist life, but also in my own personal life, having gone through a lot of crazy stuff too, right around the age of 25, which was a few years ago for me, I decided to just sit down and then try to revamp everything that I had been through and everything that I had known at that point, and try to come up with another product or come up with another idea, you know, that I can give to the people that would kind of break through and really be useful. So I sat down and I figured I'd go with this subject, for one, because religion played a huge part in my life. And throughout my life, I've noticed, you know, the government, the elites, they have so many different ways of keeping us down. And religion is definitely one. I saw that firsthand in my life. And so the book was one way to just write something that was useful, provocative, informative for the truther community to have at their disposal, at their arsenal. But it was also, the bigger goal was to also help break the indoctrination that religion has done to us. So I chose that topic to be provocative, but also to be useful.
Yeah, as a tool that can really pry people, because you are right. Like, I can't speak exactly for Joel, but I think he feels a lot the same way as me, is that we're not really into religion per se. Like, we as well believe in God, but like, you know, you can be based in where religion, but as far as the organizations, you know, a lot of organizations are very corrupt and power, you know, man with power. And I think that a lot of things do get confused. And I've said it a lot of times, and the Book of Eli is just a great example for me. Like, I seen that movie and how powerful the book, you know, the Bible is, and how people were trying to use it in way of control. And I always see it as like how it happened in the past, right? Like, at some point someone was like, hey, this word means this or this means that, and it's some form of control. Yeah, definitely.
Sean and I talk all the time about, you know, God and religion and everything. I went through an interesting journey myself. Like, you know, I started out in a real Christian home. My father is still a preacher. So, like, you know, I went through all that growing up. I turned my back on all that. I went down a really crazy road, ended up becoming a Freemason and a lot of crazy things. So, you know, I really delved into a lot of paths, which is crazy enough, brought me back to Christianity, but in a different way, though, in a whole different aspect of the way that I read the Bible and the way that I perceive God. Because at the end of the day, like, whereas like, and I do believe that the Bible is infallible, but that's my opinion. I take on anybody else's opinions and thoughts on that, because I have a lot of things that back it up, and I do a lot of research too. And I understand that, you know, when you're looking at different cultures and where things came from, and some things came before other things, at some point it comes down to a belief system, right? You just believe. Like, there's certain things that you believe, that Sean believes, and we just have different belief systems, but it's what works for us, right? So, like, for me, just going down a dark path that I went down, and the things that I did see that validated some of these demonic entities and some of these things that I knew existed, it did bring me back to Christianity full circle, but in a different way. Again, I think the church is absolutely corrupt. I think that I think religion as a whole is designed to control us. I think all of that stuff holds true. I think I can totally be, you know, a Christian and believe that, because I can tell you right now, like, you can, you know, outside of, you know, there's some, obviously some churches I believe that work well, and there's people that really care about people, but man, as a whole, the church has been corrupted, and I felt like it was infiltrated a long time ago to corrupt the good teachings of Jesus. And I think that's how I felt about it, and just the path that I've been down. But it's very interesting hearing that you came from a religious background as well, like Catholic and Christian, so you probably know just like I do what that's like coming up in a home like that. And it's, you know, I came at a very strict home. My dad was a pastor, so there's a lot of things that, you know, I wasn't allowed to see for myself. So when I got out there on my own, I went fucking haywire. You know what I mean? I wanted to see it all. So that was my path.
It's like, I mean, sure, the church is corrupt, but really it's just humanity is corrupt. You know, people are corrupt, and anytime a person's in charge of something, it's going to get corrupted. You know, whether it's church, school, government, it's like, and that's the whole point of the crisis redemption. It's like, man, we're all fucked up. You know, we all need redemption.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But I do agree with the, to me, what I got from it is what I've said a few times on here too, is that, like, I think people give too much empowerment to Lucifer, the devil, or whatever entity you want to call it. And I think that is the problem. And I think that was intentional. I think that it's put there to have people be like, oh, yeah, there's nothing you could do. Lucifer's going to get you, or the devil's going to trick you. And you're like, dude, like, no, that's not going to happen. Like, if you actually just treat people good, like, and I think it's just been like, it's almost like, you know, like, I remember back in the days, like the homies, moms, and them to be like, oh, cuckoo, he's gonna get you, you know what I mean? Like, if you don't do this, you don't do that, you're like, oh man, it's almost like a way to keep people in line. You've seen it just with parents, but I think so many people have given life to what Lucifer is, and kind of created, it's almost like manifesting this evilness that may not have, it's that always existed, but you put a name on it and you branded it, and now you've plastered it everywhere.
Going into that, if you don't mind, Eddie, could you break down the term Lucifer, where it came from, where the derivative was. I thought it was really interesting how you broke that down in the documentary. If you could do that now, because Sean segued into it, that'd be incredible.
So the entire Western world, right, like the English speaking world, the Western world, we were introduced to Lucifer through the King James Bible primarily. And in the King James Bible, the authorized version, you find Lucifer used once, and it's used in Isaiah 14:12, and it's used as an uppercase pronoun, a name. But the English version was translated from the Latin, which was translated from the Greek, which was translated from the Hebrew. Now, in the Latin version, and where we would see Lucifer, you would also find Lucifer, because Lucifer is a Latin word. That's where we got it from. And it comprises of two root words, lucis or lux, light, and fere, which means to bring or to hold. So that's where the occult got the idea of Lucifer being the light bearer. But in the Latin Vulgate, the Latin version, Lucifer is used multiple times throughout the Bible, and it's used as an adjective, a lowercase word. Now, in the Greek version, where we would see Lucifer today, we would see Phosphorus, which is the Greek equivalent of the Latin Lucifer. Again, it's used as an adjective, and Phosphorus means light, fire, bright. And there's a reason why those two terms are used in the Latin and in the Greek, because where we would see Lucifer today, in the Hebrew, the original, we would see Hillel ben Shahar. Now, Hillel is a name, and it means bright. And so Hillel ben Shahar means Hillel, son of Shahar. And Shahar means dawn, like Sahar. So Shahar means dawn. And so that's where we got Lucifer, son of the morning. But there's a reason why Isaiah is using this verbiage. Now, Isaiah himself was a scribe and a prophet, a royal one, if that, right? He worked alongside with the kings. And when Isaiah was writing this stuff right around the onset of the 600 or the 6th century BC, the Babylonians, come down off a fever. But the Babylonians were descending upon the kingdom of Judah at that time. And so there was chaos around Jerusalem. And this was right before they were going to be taken captive to Babylon. So Isaiah was writing this as a prophecy. You know, he was writing. He was writing a prophecy about the downfall of the Babylonians who were taking them captive. So if you go back and read Isaiah 14, it's a prophecy, a poetic prophecy. And the reason he used the word Hillel ben Shahar is because he was referencing an old Ugaritic tale, and Ugarit belonged to the old Canaanite kingdom. And we know about this tale because we uncovered it in the 30s in what are now known as the Baal cycle text. And so Isaiah, again, being an ancient scribe, a prophet, was aware of the old world myths and legends much more than we were. Those were his ancestors. You know, the Bible makes it clear that the Canaanites were the cousins, if not the direct ancestors of the Jews. So he was aware of his ancestral myths and legends. So there was a famous tale in the Baal cycle text that talks about Baal stepping down from the throne. And as he stepped down from the throne, the gods conversed among themselves. Well, who's going to rule in his stead? And that's when this younger god by the name of Athtar stepped up to the throne and said, "Oh, I'll do it." But in the tale, he finds that he's literally too short, too small to rule on the throne. So he's like, "Never mind, I'm not going to do it." And it's like an allegorical tale, basically saying that nobody can be like Baal. But Athtar in that tale is son of Shahar. And Athtar is a male rendition of the Astarte or Ishtar or Inanna. And all of those were goddesses of the old world, too. She was just reimagined for a short period of time as Athtar, the male version. But makes this all more deeper, and there, another reason why Isaiah was referencing this, is that the word Hillel, the name Hillel, the word Phosphorus, and the word Lucifer in the Latin can all be used to represent Venus. And those goddesses were always represented by Venus as well. And so Venus, as we know, in the sky is the brightest celestial object preceding the sun. And you could see it with your naked eye. So Venus's cosmological or celestial mythology has always been that it is the brightest object in the sky preceding the sun in the morning star. So what Isaiah was saying to these Babylonian kings was, you think that you are something of importance. You think that you are like Hillel Ben-Shahar, that you can step up to the throne. You think you are like Venus, the brightest celestial object, but you will soon be overshadowed by Yahweh or God via the sun, right? Or the glory of God.
Yeah, see, that's what I think. And I've said it for years, in obviously not in those terms and not breaking things down, but I've always thought, like, obviously when you're translating things, they get messy. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, just seeing my friends that, like, I used to tell my buddy, I'll be like, man, because you speak Spanish and English. I'll be like, dude, sometimes do you say something in English and then think it in Spanish? He's like, yeah, I fucking do, man. So I can only imagine, you know, like in words, and even sometimes when they translate a word or a phrase that everybody says, you're like, if you translate to English, you're like, it makes no sense. So I can see that same commonality, especially when you're talking about four or five different languages, ancient languages. And I think that's happened a lot. And as well as, you know, using it for power. And that's why I think Lucifer, like, that's something that has been trapped in the human psyche for a long time. And it's been used for us not to explore certain things, you know, like, hey, that's black magic, or hey, like, don't look at this or that, because you're going to get trapped by Lucifer. So I think it's not let us explore as much.
So I thought it was interesting too, when you broke down Saint Lucifer and how that he was really going against the church at the time, and they actually put him on an island, if I'm correct, or he was exiled to an island, but he was allowed to come back. And even then he butted heads with them, but how that they integrated, you know, they never said they did, but how they used kind of his name to take that place in the Bible, as you said, that pronoun, that uppercase L. I thought that was pretty fascinating, because I hadn't heard that before. And if you could explain that a little bit more, would be really good.
So right around in the fourth century, the Council of Nicaea was going down, right? And I'm sure most of us are somewhat familiar with that. But for those who aren't, the Council of Nicaea is where the church, for the first time, congregated under Emperor Constantine's authority to decide, you know, what they were going to universally believe, you know, on certain subjects. So as the Council of Nicaea was going down, there were different doctrines happening, you know, different schisms that were going on, different debates. And the huge one was Arianism versus Athanasius. So it was Arius versus Athanasius. And the Arian doctrine was that God and Jesus are two different people, two different creations, that God later created Jesus. And the Athanasius point of view was that Jesus and God are the same person, and that Jesus is just an emanation of God. And the person who wrote the Latin Vulgate, the Latin version, where we got Lucifer for the first time, is Saint Jerome. And he's famous. If you go to school to be a theologian or whatever, or even learn anything remotely about the Bible in its early onset, you're going to come across Saint Jerome. He's very important in early church history. And so Saint Jerome was witnessing all of this, and he wrote books about it, and he translated the Latin Vulgate. And so during all of this, there was another theologian, another bishop, by the name of Saint Lucifer of Cagliari, Italy. And Saint Lucifer was on the side of Athanasius. He was on the side that God and Jesus were the same being. They were one. And so he was going against the Arian doctrine, which said that God and Jesus are two different people. And the reason why this was crazy and why this was a debate is because it could justify a lot of different things. So the Arian doctrine could justify a king like Constantine saying, well, if Christ was merely created and appointed, then so could somebody else be. So Saint Lucifer was actually a good guy if you vouch for Jesus and the church. So he was vouching.
Right. Which is wild when you break that down. Like, it's so crazy.
Yeah. Yeah.
I love that part of it. That's nuts to me.
Well, it's just a spin, you know, like it kind of throws you through a loop, because it's like almost like dirtying that person's name so that you can never go look into it. You're never going to go, oh, and you're just right away like, oh, that Lucifer, man, that's bad.
So I want to say this real quick. And me, from the background of being a Christian, and I believe that, you know, Lucifer, and I'm going to use just the word Lucifer or Satan, because I think he goes by a myriad of different names. But I think if you believe like I believe that Lucifer is the type to twist things that are good, I think that that was... Here's this guy who's vouching for Jesus. You know what? I'm going to take his name and that's going to be my name. And I think that's so that's what resonated to me, was like, this is so crazy. Like, would it really, like, when you actually break it down, that this was a good dude. He was like really trying to like stand up against the system. He's like kind of like what us three here try to do, is enlighten people, stand up against the system, put the truth out there. Yeah. And here he gets just royally fucked.
He got exiled and banned. And then later on, when he got accepted back into the kingdom after the Constantinian dynasty was over with, he was a part of another debate where he was debating whether any bishop or clergyman could be accepted back into the church who had converted to Arianism. And they used his own trick against him, his own philosophy against him. They said, well, if Christ is God, he's the only one who can forgive. So you can't forgive us. So therefore, we can come back to the church. And Saint Jerome, the guy who wrote the Vulgate, wrote about that too in a work known as the I believe the Dialogue Against the Luciferians, which is wild. And because Lucifer as a name just means bright, shiny, so it used to be an endearing name, you know, back in those days.
That's super wild. And then it's been
just like kind of totally flipped. I mean, like, now if you hear Lucifer, like, you're like, oh man, like, you can't even really say that like name without like somebody like getting cringy or like, hey man, you know, like, watch what you're saying, you know. And I think, to me, that's what I thought. Like, it's really funny because I was watching your documentary again at the same time as I was watching Westworld, and It really kind of correlated together for me, because it's like kind of the same thing, because they're like trying to create a new world from a world that they were beat down from this. And it's just that same dynamic of like, what is what is reality? And people are constantly manipulating it and trying to create their own thing, like using a little bit of this, and people use God, you know, a lot of kings use God as a weapon, to where they're like, oh, well, I'm appointed from, you know what I mean? And when you say the Aryan, like, I was just wondering, curious if, what does that have to do with like the Aryan Brotherhood? Like, does that
It's a coincidence. Like... But really briefly though, the whole Aryan thing is it's a trip as well. And I have a documentary on my channel about ancient Tibet. Check it out. I go into it a little bit. The whole Aryan thing is just wild too, because where that comes from, it comes from Tibet. So the Nazis actually sent expeditions out to Tibet, and we have pictures of it, because they were looking for remnants of the Aryan race or theirs. So they believed that their ancestors belonged to this legendary race of people that lived in Shambhala and all of that. But all of that comes from this old Tibet. Yeah, but that whole Aryan thing actually comes from an ancient Tibetan legend.
So hollow, like, earth, right?
I don't know. It's kind of weird that like the Nazis picked that up for whatever reason.
That is wild. Yeah, for sure. Well, actually, and I know they were always seeking hollow earth too, so I don't know if there's a correlation between that. I forgot to mention,
yeah, so the whole Aryan thing. So Aryan,
that's why I was wondering that comes why, from like, the
Vedas. The Hindu religious scripts. Arya, the root word is Arya, which means noble or royal. So there's this whole like thing, dude. It's a huge debate, like in Indian scholarship against Western scholarship, about the Aryan invasion. If when you have time, look into the Aryan invasion theory. It's a huge debate in the Indian scholarship, but based off of that theory is where the Westerners, the Germanic people, and some of the others, like even some of the whatever, but mostly the Germanic people, use that Aryan invasion theory to kind of say that their ancestors are older than some of the Indians and stuff like that. It's a whole crazy thing. But the Aryan, that comes from the Vedas. That word, that concept comes from the Vedas. The hollow earth thing comes from the Tibetan legends. So they kind of fuse those things together
Gotcha. Okay.
Man, history is so crazy, man. It's just wild, like how, and it's hard to piece together, you know, because you have to keep digging and digging, and a lot of stuff you can't even find. Seriously. Like I've seen you post plenty of times,
tough,
like how
man.
Hard
it's
it
tough.
Is to find a certain book.
It or really is.
It might be the
but
only
it's fun,
book
man.
Left.
I love doing it. You know, I get like a high off of it. You know what I mean? It's like I'm passionate about it, and you get hype. It's like you know hip hop, right? It's like when you find like a sample, you know, like if when you, yeah. Yeah. It's the same thing, dude. It's the same thing. Like, damn, what?
Especially the one that nobody else found. Like, and you're like, found it. Plus, it's nice, too, because I think people are appreciative of what you're doing because it's nice to have a fresher breath, a breath of fresh air of someone different that could kind of like break it down for people. Even though you're giving us knowledge, you're able to make it easier for people like me that don't understand everything to digest. You know what I mean? Like that. I'm like, okay, oh, I get where he's coming from. And it's smooth. It's running through it easily. And I see a lot of people resonating with it. And I think that no one's really doing it as much anymore. Think about it. Like all the people that were kind of doing it, you kind of remind me of like a Jordan Maxwell-ish. You know what I mean? Like he's gone. Like all those other people are gone. You're like kind of the last of the Mohicans. You know what I mean? Really breaking down a lot of the knowledge because everybody dabbles in everything, but like you're really digging into the actual hard textbooks, the things that like all of us could Google, you know what I mean? But Google could only get you so far. You have to actually see the text and how it was written and then see the altered versions and keep digging through and through to find out what this connection really is. Cause that's what's so murky. History's so murky. And there's so many people that are trying to claim their stake in we're the greatest race or we're the greatest person. We're the oldest people. We're the ones that started this world. It's this constant like battle of who started everything. And it's like, well, I really personally don't care. Like I'm interested in knowing. I mean, I'm not like, yeah, I did it. Like, I don't care about that shit. Like, I think it's interesting to figure out all these, you know, ancient cultures, but it seems that people use it as a weapon as to be like, oh yeah, we started the earth, so we should inherit it. And that's why I was correlating it to Westworld, because that's kind of how it gets in there. Cause now the host, you know, like the humans, they're both kind of like, well, now I created the world, so I inherit it, or I've surpassed you and we're the superior race or the superior being. And that seems to be a theme throughout history.
Yeah. I think for me, just looking at religion as a whole, even different religions, you know, somebody's trying to take their stake in like what religion's the best or whatever. I try to just look at the tenets of what it's built on. If something's built on a lot of like power and a lot of, you know, control, which all of religions has been integrated with. But if like the basis of it was built on that, I tend to lean away from that. Cause to me, it's more about love and caring about people and understanding people. I think, something that Sean and I talk about a lot on the show is, you know, having civil discord with people in the sense of you don't have to agree with something everybody says. Honestly, when I go into a conversation with somebody, I just try to learn, you know, they may say something that maybe I don't agree with, but then I go start doing some research. And then 3 months later, I'm like, ah, man, they were spot on. Like they really said some fire shit that, you know, if I hadn't had that mind frame and able to evolve my mind, I would never have taken on board that. So I think that's very important. And, you know, reading too, Sean, like you said, that's something I've really been on hard the past few years is just getting books, reading books. And Eddie, you do a really good job of doing documentaries for people that aren't really into that. So it's kind of like they're reaping the benefits of all your research, but it's a good thing though. You know what I mean? But I think reading's important though, because I try to get books and read, and it's a different feeling when you're reading the book and you have it in your hand and you're able to like soak up the knowledge, because then you can make notes, then you can highlight things and you can go back and look at it again. That's helped me out a lot anyway over the years.
Yeah, dude. Yeah. Reading has played a huge role in my entire process. And I've always been a reader and a writer. Like in school, I was a terrible kid in school, you know, but reading and writing is something that I always stuck with for some reason. And it's helped me out in the long run.
So let me ask you a question. Let's tie Lucifer in with the Sumerians, because that's really where it really started going deep down the rabbit hole. I want to hear about this for sure.
All right. So in the book, right, the book's titled The Lucifer Mystery Revealed. And but I reveal who Lucifer really is in the third chapter. So halfway through the book. So it's because it's not really a huge secret, at least in my mind, in the truther community. You know, if you've been in the community long enough, you can kind of make the dots. But basically, the first half of the book is telling you Lucifer never actually existed in the Bible. You know, as I kind of walked through earlier, mm-hmm. right? It was always a mistranslation that was picked up and then just kind of blown out of proportion. But oftentimes in the church and in the occult, Lucifer gets coupled with the serpent in the Garden of Eden, more so in the occult. And both the occult and the church are like two forces that really couldn't exist without the other, which is kind of funny. Like the more the occult like does their stuff, the more the church like, you know, talks down on it and like, look what they're doing. And then the more the church talks down on them, the more they do their stuff. So it's like they're two like magnetic forces that just keep making these archetypes flourish. But in the occult loves the Lucifer concept. But I always say both the occult and the church are playing the same game. They're just characters, different characters in that board game. They're using the same characters. You know, it's almost like Marvel or whatever. They're using, it's the same universe that they're coming from.
Just playing with Thanos.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same board game, just different characters.
It's heroes and villains. You know what I mean? It's one's a hero and one's supposed to play the villain, and they have to, without each other, they can't exist.
Yeah. So in the occult, Lucifer is always referred back to the serpent in the Garden of Eden. And when we look at that archetype and that character, then we can really start to pull out a true Lucifer, a person who actually existed in the minds of our ancestors. And so the serpent, so first of all, the Old Testament specifically, a lot of it is based on the old world mythologies, the Canaanite mythologies, the Sumerian mythologies, and that's just facts now. And it doesn't mean that the Bible is not true. It actually means it's more so true because it's got deeper roots, it's got deeper history. And so when we look at it through that lens, we can kind of see who some of the characters that were simplified actually were. For example, in the flood story in the Bible, it's now well known that that flood story is a summarization of the Sumerian version, where there isn't one God, but two gods. And those two gods who are deciding whether or not to flood the earth are two brother gods that belong to the Sumerian pantheon known as Enki and Enlil. And Enlil is always remembered by scholars and Assyriologists and the Sumerians as this more vindictive, militant god. And Enki is always remembered by the Assyriologists, the scholars, and the Sumerians as this more sympathetic, clever god. And he's always remembered as being the god of wisdom, the god of knowledge, and he's represented as a snake oftentimes throughout the old world. So it's obvious now, looking at the Bible through that lens, who the serpent in the Garden of Eden was. The serpent was Enki. You know, he was sympathetic towards the new humans, and he was trying to, you know, kick us with some games, some knowledge, and wake us up a little bit to the potentiality of what we were. And the other gods never liked that. They never liked that he was always doing that to us, you know. And so so Lucifer, when coupled with the serpent in the Garden of Eden, would be Enki.
Interesting. You know,
so it really he turned into he's actually the more not heroish, but like the one that would be more relatable to us and caring more about our particular life. And he's kind of turned into the villain. And it's kind of crazy when you say that, because especially in the truther world, you know, like he's like, hey, these fruits do this. This is what this world is. And the other side is like, oh, don't do that. You just obey what I say. You know, like this is how we do it. You can't do that. And it's kind of obviously I'm like really like breaking it down like in as simplest terms I can. But that's how I'm kind of like, you kind of just gave me a little epiphany off that, because I'm like, so, yeah, you could turn anybody into a villain over time.
Yeah, man. Yeah, I just had a conversation on TikTok Live with a homie who goes by Become Set Apart. You guys should check him out. He calls himself a Nazarene. He's one of those dudes that kind of like fashion himself after the Old Testament and like really believe in calling God Yeshua and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But he said something that really like kind of like stuck with me. And he said, you don't have to follow the Bible. You don't have to. Like, people are always talking about the Bible is oppressive, religion is oppressive, God is oppressive. First of all, you don't have to follow it. It's not oppressing you. The Bible is a manual on how to be an eternal being. And unfortunately, for those who don't want to be eternal beings or who want to live life on the worldly terms, in order to be an eternal being, you need to cleanse and purge yourself to perfection.
That makes a lot of sense, though. I can attest to that. And I think, you know, when I came back around to the Bible, I really looked at it completely different. My whole thing's about a relationship with God anyway. It's not about church. It's not about a whole construct, because I think that's when you start getting in a lot of trouble. And you look throughout history where a lot of control was implemented with that kind of stuff. Now, I will say this, Sean, because I know you were talking about Lucifer and you were too. And we were talking about Enke. And my only pushback is, being from my side of things, is that him being as crafty as he is, it would seem like he could make himself seem more sympathetic to humankind in a deceptive way, to where we're, you know, buying into the fact that, oh, poor, you know, snake, poor Lucifer, he was oppressed. You could look at it from that angle too. I think there's like two sides of it, but I find both sides very interesting and very, you know, they're roads that I keep going down. So
yeah. No, you're right, man. And you're right. There's actually a text that I came across, I'm getting ready to release my second book, which is going to be in September, which dives more deeper into the Anunnaki and comparative theology. And so I had to take a look at all of this in a more critical aspect, because when I first got into this whole Anunnaki thing back in high school, I got into it through Zechariah Sitchin, right? The dude who gave us the Anunnaki theory and all that back in the 70s. And I was a fanboy for many years, just took it all as fact, you know. But then over the years, I would kind of point little nuanced things. I was like, I don't know, man, it's kind of stretching it. But anyway, so with this book, I went back and critically analyzed all the things that he had said about the Sumerians and the Anunnaki and how it's the basis for the Bible. But there is a text, I forgot what it's called, but it's the Adapa. It's one of the Adapa texts. And Adapa was one of the early human prototypes. He's kind of looked at as the Sumerian Adam. But there is a text where Enki does connivingly trick Adapa into denying himself eternal life. It's a strange text. And so Enki, there are texts that show Enki as being conniving too. So you're right there.
I'm going to hit you up later. You gotta get me access to read that. I want to read that. I'll definitely DM you and you can send that to me.
But really, like, it's just a trip, man, to like think who is like right, who's like, that's why I like where we're talking. Like, to me, like, I was against the Bible for a while. I was even like, was hating God. I was like, man, I don't even like it. Not that, and I never did not believe in God. I just hated him for a while. And then like, I kind of like, and I never, and then even when I got better relationship with God, I didn't even want to read the Bible until I was in jail. Cause obviously I had nothing else to do. Right. And the one book that really, for me, resonated with me is Job. Right. Cause I kind of understood it. Cause it was like the most I could relate to my life, where you're like, dang, this is getting taken away. This is getting taken away. This is, are you still going to stand with it? And that's when I always took like the Bible as like a tool. Like, and I think that's what people kind of use it differently. It's not only a tool. And then what me and Joel kind of talk about a lot too, and not just us, but many others, is like, I think people underestimate the metaphysical of the Bible, right? Like, they think everything is either literal or it's like fable, like, which it is. But I think like they don't see the paranormal that's in the Bible, that there is access that maybe we have, that there's things that we're not getting to decode, and the books that are missing from it that could be puzzles to our brain to unlock things that we, you know, experiences in this world that we're not even, you know, we don't even know at this moment, but that can unlock those. And I think that is something that is why it's pushed with like Lucifer, in my opinion, why like the Lucifer and like, hey, the good and the bad, like you were saying with the church, like, you know, the church and the occult is constantly, they it's like wrestling, you know what I mean? You got to have the bad, good guy and the bad guy. You can't have you have to have Andre the Giant and Hulk Hogan, it doesn't work with just with two heroes. You have to have the hero and the villain. And they, you know, the villain said, oh, he's winning. He's killing everybody. Oh, but the hero comes in and he saves everybody. And everybody, you know what I mean? He fucking gives you the little ear roll. And everybody's like, oh, fucking Hulkamania, motherfucker. Like, and I think that that's what happens. And I mean, you could even see it with politics, right? The Democrats and the Republicans need each other because somebody needs to be the villain. Right now, Trump's the hero in some people's eyes. He's the villain. But they've done it where they're able to double code it now, where some people see you as a villain and some see you as a hero. Same thing with the church and the occult. Some people see the occult as the hero in the righteous way of what mankind should be going towards, and some see it as the villain, and vice versa with religion and church. So I think the more we have discussions and trying to really figure it out, because none of us are actually acting like, oh man, I got all the answers, because we're all trying to figure it out and we want to see where this leads us, instead of like, oh, we got to determine, we're done, you know what I mean? Oh, close case, man, like, you know what I mean? Well, let's get out of here. And that's how we keep building. And I think that's the wonderful thing about seeing so many people like you, well, mainly that me, I follow you mainly to see most of the stuff, but that read these old texts, like, so I can kind of get an understanding of like, what were they talking about? How did people get onto this idea at all? Like, where do these seeds come from? And it's very interesting for me to like kind of see all that. And now, because I'm on my own little spiritual journey, I'm sure, which all of us are. And like me personally, like, I know some people don't like the term spirituality. I just say that because it's something I don't know how else to describe, because I believe in God. I'm not necessarily not saying I don't believe in Jesus, or I just don't know. I think that's too murky for me. I just know that there's a creator and that I'm on a journey to figure out where he wants me to go and what he wants me to help reveal for others.
It's a good place to be. I think you said it perfectly though, Sean. I don't know, kind of piggyback on what you said a little bit when it comes to the church and how the church has dumbed down the supernatural and dumbed down those aspects. You know why? Because they infiltrated the church. They don't want us to have that connection with God. They don't want us to know that there's this other surreal world that's metaphysical. If you read the Bible, it's a pretty fantastical book about a lot of crazy things going on. I mean, even in the New Testament, I mean, Jesus was like kicking it with Moses and Elijah on the mountain, and the disciples saw them literally just walking with him. And these are guys that aren't around anymore. I mean, you know, we know Elijah went directly to heaven, you know, didn't die, but we're talking about two guys that literally just kind of walked around with Jesus. We're talking about, you know, super metaphysical stuff going on. And I think that that's always taken away out of the aspect, because what's easier, you know, to dumb us down, to break our connections off with God and break our connections off with the spiritual world than acting like it really doesn't exist. Oh, these are just all fables and parables. Yeah, there's a lot of like parables and a lot of things in the Bible that are there to, you know, give us, you know, good guidelines. But there's some stuff in there too where I'm like, hey, are you reading this right now? Like, they're not talking about, this isn't a fable that they're speaking of it mm-hmm. as. And there are other texts too outside of the Bible, plenty, where they talk about that. You look at throughout all cultures, there is plenty of examples of metaphysical things going on. And if you look at the correlation between all cultures, how they all have similar stories, then you kind of start getting into that aspect of like, there's something to this here. There's something to this metaphysical world. There's something to this spiritual world. And, but it goes back to control. They want to keep us in our little matrixes where we don't connect with that.
Yeah, man.
You know,
this is
power.
Probably going to come out later than obviously tomorrow, but on tomorrow, I'm dropping a small documentary on a Spanish group of mystics known as the Alumbrados, the Enlightened. And they're a fascinating small group of people that just like, they're a little blip in the early 16th century. And what made them fascinating is that they actually broke away from the church and decided that they could read the Bible on their own, and that they would meditate in prayer, and they didn't need the church and stuff like that. And the church didn't like that. So eventually there was a whole inquisition just to chase these people down and then jail them and kill them.
Damn. See, one question I have for you, Eddie, that's I've been wondering for a while. Like, so do you get like when you go on, like, because, you know, you've been on some bigger shows and stuff, do you get like kind of like people that get pissed off at you, like, you know, like hardcore, like religious people, or do more people kind of like resonate, like you resonate with me, but I could see like just having conversations with hardcore, like, you know, church people that kind of like get offended by like, if you're different of a difference of opinion, you know,
I've never had somebody like directly hit me up with that energy. I, to be honest, I try to stay away from comments and stuff like that, you know. On my own channel, I'll check them out, you know, so I can, you know, big up the people who are supporting and give them feedback or whatever and conversate and engage. But like on the other shows that I do,
yeah,
sometimes I'll go through the comment section just to kind of just see what, you know, see what's popping, see what people think. And I mean, a lot of it's just love, man. A lot of it's support, even for the people who like are heavily on the religious side, you know, even like, so, to answer your question, yeah, nobody's like come like hit me up directly with that type of energy or that's really receptive to it. And I'm cool with that. But I have seen some sly things, though. I have seen some sly things.
Yeah. But I think that's also a testament to your character. Like, I think how you carry yourself goes a long way, too.
Yeah, I think anytime you challenge the Bible, you're going to get a lot of that pushback.
Oh yeah. No, yeah. The funny thing is like a lot of times actually when I do surf through the comments, a lot of the negative ones, which I don't even see them as negative. Honestly, I think they're funny. I think the negative ones are funny in my mind because people don't really know me. It's like they really don't know me. And I'm a goofball, dude, like at heart, you know, like I'm a very serious scholar and I take my work serious, but like outside of all this, you guys see me on Instagram. I like to fuck around, make jokes and stuff. But, actually, a lot of the negative comments come from people on the occult side who will be like, but yeah, they'll just say like just sly things like he doesn't know anything, like Lucifer is the most high, or like, you know, they'll just like they get crushed, you know, they get crushed that I'm crushing their hero, or they get, you know, like that I'm breaking down the occult to such a scrutiny, you know, like they get upset. They get upset because I'm like, bro, it's just archetypes.
Hey, Eddie, this is like, I did a video on Enoch a few days back, and I was explaining how that the Enoch that wrote the Book of Enoch was not the Enoch that they thought that it was, and it was actually the son of Cain. And if you do like Freemason research and you understand like the Anderson legend and the Oliver legend and where that actually came from, the Freemasons actually came and tried to wipe that out, that they put that out there when they did. But it actually ties into the pillars, and a lot of people think that the pillars are, you know, Boaz and Jachin, but it's not, though. They're actually the sons of Lamech. So when they broke all of that down, you know, it ties back to the son of Cain, which is Enoch. So it was kind of that sleight of hand that the Freemasons did, that even the Brotherhood of the Snake did back in the day, to slide in this whole other thing and make it seem like the Book of Enoch was supposed to be, because it was so close to the Bible, except a few major things if you check it out. So, man, I posted that. You talk about the church crowd getting super angry, like that's Enoch. What are you talking about? Enoch was like, you just saw this minute 30 second video and you just got angry instead of being like, man, that's interesting. I might want to go look into that and see maybe if there's some truth or validity to it. Because I've done a lot of research on it. So, I mean, for me, you know, and again, if I'm wrong, come prove me wrong. I don't have a problem with that either. Like,
yeah. Yeah. No, I saw that, man. That is something I've come across before, too. The whole Enoch thing. It's pretty fascinating. The whole line of Cain is weird, too. It's just like the Bible just stops mentioning it after a while. It's like, well, where did they go?
Right. You know? Oh, yeah, for sure. And it ties into, you know, when you get down to like the sixth generations, when they start interbreeding with fallen angels and the Nephilim are created and, you know, all that kind of, you know, obviously leads up into the deluge. So you got all that going on, which is real interesting. But the Cain thing was just mind blowing to me. And the Enoch, the two Enoch thing was really interesting. But no, I can speak from experience. I know when you challenge people's like belief systems, they can get super angry sometimes. I never get angry, though. If somebody says something that I don't think or whatever, like I'm gonna go look into it and be like, wow, that I didn't even think about that. That's a whole different way of looking at things.
Well, I think it has to do with how society is structured now, though, too. Like, because if you notice, like, when you're talking to, like, not necessarily like someone's bigger in the industry or I mean, in this truth or world or whatever, but people that are kind of been around more don't really like, there's a few that take it like that. They're just assholes, right? I mean, there's assholes everywhere we go, no matter what, but for the most people in the truther community that have been doing this for a long time, they're going to have an open dialogue with you. It seems to be the ones that are just really just dying for attention and nobody's listening to them and nobody's following them. And they get pissed off at these bigger pages or people that are doing it. And a lot of times they don't go and look at themselves. Like, what are they doing wrong? Hey man, your editing sucks. You're not fucking putting out material that people want to hear. That's resonating with people. And instead of looking within themselves, like usual, people go attack other people. And instead of, cause just like how journalism works now, you know, now journalism, they just go, oh, that fucking piece of shit. They go on Twitter instead of saying, hey, you know what? I don't agree with that story he wrote. I'm gonna investigate it myself and write my own thing on it. And now instead it just everybody goes to Twitter, fucking idiot, like that's like the first thing. That fool's a bitch, man.
Yeah, I mean, we
got called a CIA agent today.
Really?
Man.
I'm waiting till I get to that yeah, that level of fame, dude, where people think.
I know. I was like, I think we're getting on there.
I can't wait till somebody calls me a Freemason, dude.
Well, it's funny because I get hit all the time because I have an eye tattooed and an owl tattooed on me. And this was during, you know, times that, you know, I was a Freemason and a lot of these things. So, you know, people see that and the first thing is controlled opposition. You know, I'm part of the system. Like Sean said, I got called CIA today. I was like, man, I'm leveling up, man. So, I was like, Sean, man, catch up, man. I was like, next time this year, I'll be a full fledged Illuminati.
Yeah. Hell yeah.
Yeah, it's just funny how people like come at these things. But like I said, when you really talk to like a lot of the people that have been into the truth of world for a long time that actually do research, they don't come at you like that. You know what I mean? The other people are just, that's their lane. There's a couple pages that I won't speak to their name right now, but maybe eventually when they say mine, that they just kind of play into these roles of everything's fake or don't believe that guy instead of saying, hey, let's listen to a little bit of everybody's information because none of us have the answer. But so many people, whether it's in politics or esoteric or if it's the occult or like, you know, go on whatever subject where they like flat earthers, I got to get into them with a lot too, where they have it absolutely right. Like, I'm like, man, I'll give you 50%, bro. Like, I can't say like, because I only know so much, right? My knowledge is limited. But when you go, man, that's fucking right, bro. Like I said it, so it's right.
Yeah, dude. Yeah, there's beef everywhere. There's beef in the truther community. I've already been a part of somewhat just involved through the crossfires with some of the podcasts that I've been on, dude, a couple times already. And I'm like, yo, like this has got nothing to do with me. Like this is your guys' beef, you know. It's just I'm a scholar, dude. I'm just here trying to drop some knowledge, you know.
Yeah, that's how I think it's supposed to be. Like, I haven't personally got into any really beefs with any, like, it's always like just people that want to build. And I'm like, dude, you could just do the same thing I'm doing, man. Like, you can do what Eddie's doing. You could do what Joel's doing. You could do what I'm doing. It's go put the time in, go do the work. Like, you can't go be a star athlete and be like, man, and just sit on your ass all day and fucking eat donuts and be like, man, I should have been in the NFL. No, motherfucker, you didn't put in the work. You're getting to these shows. You're getting your shit out there. You're constantly, how much work do you put in? I see all the time. I watch your stories. I'm seeing you're constantly working. And like I was saying before we got on, we're all working guys. We all have jobs, like, you know, so not only do we do our jobs, then we go home and we go and fucking hit the books, do our, you know, put videos together, put podcasts together, all this stuff. And I think that once you have that opportunity, because I think we got to do the push to get you on Rogan. We get Eddie on Rogan. Really, because what's he going to do, man? Like, how is he going to push back against you, man? I think you have way too much knowledge that Rogan's not going to be able to push back. He's going to be like,
I'll be hyped, man. I'm bringing everybody with me. I'm taking the team with me.
So, Eddie, let me ask you a question.
The people's chant.
I want to ask Eddie a question because you were talking about you came up in the church. What was that moment for you when you really wanted to start discovering things yourself and you started really expanding out into like esoteric knowledge and really just wanting to understand from an academic standpoint, like what you're getting into now, because I think that's very important, I think, for people to hear, and I want to hear personally myself.
Yeah, man, absolutely. So my entire life has revolved around this stuff, and it's a story I've told frequently, but because it's just true, and I couldn't put it any other simple way. Like, some of my earliest memories have to do with coming across certain pieces of information and knowledge. Like, for example, one that I tell pretty often is when I was in first grade, I came across a book that mentioned the Knights Templars inadvertently. You know, it was a book about dinosaurs and dragons and knights, but there was a portion in that book that talked about knights looking for the Holy Grail. And so that is like one of the earliest core memories I have in the first grade is that. And all kinds of other things. And all throughout elementary, I was a rebellious kid. I listened to like classic rock, like Pink Floyd, Hendrix, Bob Marley. So even in elementary, I had an anti-establishment attitude. You know, like I would run around school with like my hands up going, tear down the wall, you know, from Pink Floyd. Like I was always like that, you know, and I never liked going to church. I was never like a button up, like, yay, like church, you know, like it, that was never like that. Like I just grew up in the church. So I grew up knowing the Bible, knowing the verses, knowing the institution. I never liked the institution. I was always bummed out about going. But and I say all that to say that, like, so ever since I was a little kid, I was always independently thinking. And the first time that I realized that there was something more to the Bible was probably right around, like, well, I got to chalk it up to hip hop first. So hip hop actually taught me that first, you know, through certain artists like Jedi Mind Tricks and Mortal Technique and stuff like that. And I discovered them in like fifth grade, sixth grade. So again, like early on in my life, I was like, I didn't know what they were saying, but I just knew it was deep and there was truth to it. And then when I came across, I would probably say it was the work of Zechariah Sitchin that really set it all off for me. And I found him in about ninth grade. When I came across his books in the ninth grade, he breaks it down to such great detail. And he tells you basically through his Earth Chronicles series that the Bible is a summarized version about the Anunnaki, these beings that came down here and genetically engineered Homo sapiens. And he just blows your mind with all this stuff, whether it's true or not. That was the first time where I was like, wait, what? Like, so all this, these feelings and these intuitions I had about the Bible and the government being sneaky and doing weird stuff is real. You know, it was... He was the dude that really like enlightened that intuition, and then from then on it just took off.
Yeah, see, that's like good that to hear that, because I've been talking a lot about that. We were actually talking about that earlier, me and Joel, like what gets people into it. And a lot of us cop out, like me, I say it all the time, like, oh, 9/11. But really, if you think about it, when you really go deep, there's this whole trail that you can really trace down. Now, there might be this huge incident that you remember, like 9/11, something that we could all remember and that we knew the cover-ups and something we could detail. But there's so many other aspects that when we're younger, if you really start to think about your childhood of what made you different, how you were thinking. Like, I like how you're saying an independent thinker. And I think that's how I think most of us were. Like, I think having that open-mindedness and especially when you question things, I remember me a lot, like I would question, well, why do we have to do that? Why does it have to be this way? Why? And you know, a lot of people didn't like that. They were like, man, just do it. Like, you know what I mean? And I'm like, but why? Like, it don't make sense to me. Like, even like stupid things, like I would be like, well, why can't I wear a hat in church? They'd be like, you can't. I'm like, well, why can't that old lady wear a hat in church? I can't wear a hat in church, but the old lady could wear a hat in church. Like, what's the fucking difference? Like, just fucking don't wear a hat. And I'm like, I'm gonna fucking wear my hat. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and it would just be little things like that. And I think that we complicate things instead of just seeing it as, you know, being an independent, open-minded thinker. And that's what the world needs, because we don't need conformity. We don't need a complete hive mind. We need everybody kind of just figuring it out and taking pieces. And, you know, we could take pieces from each other, but not to just be like, oh, I'm all in on this, I'm all in on that. That's, I think, the best way to go forward.
Yeah, I think that's a dangerous place to be when you're just all in with something. I think that, you know, as human beings, we should always, you know, try to grow as much as possible. I tell Sean all the time, hey, I love it when I'm proved wrong. That means I learned something new today. Like, you know, I don't look at it as a bad thing. And I think, too, that, you know, I want to build something that makes people want to come together, not tear people apart. I used to think that way. I used to want to just step on people's necks and get to the top and do whatever I could to get there. That was a very alluring thing for me. Money and power can be. But, you know, as I walked through life and I realized really where I wanted to be at, did I want to end up in a place of just emptiness, maybe having a lot of money and power, but just empty? Or did I want to build something that had meaning? And when I leave this earth, you know, I leave my family, my kids, you know, other people that I built stuff with, that energy too. It's all about energy.
Plus, you got to think about it like on the opposite end, right? If you're all in and you kind of are proven wrong and you don't want to look like a fool, you're going to do whatever it takes to make yourself look right. You're going to, you know, kill people. You're going to do false flags. You're going to put things in bad positions because you're like, well, I can't be wrong because this is my whole life. My whole life was rooted into this one thought. So I think that's the other danger. And that's why I think you get a lot with the occult and stuff. And why, like, you know, when we go back to what we're talking in the beginning about the whole Lucifer thing, is that's why I think those things, because people are so embedded of like, no, Jesus was God and Christ, and he created Christ later. Why? Because it was beneficial for them, because it's beneficial for them to be like, oh, now it's okay for me to rule on this earth, because, you know, it's not like, and I think that's what it all boils down to, because they can't be, they're so rooted in these ideas that they can't be wrong, and they'll make sure that they're right anyway by changing words, taking books out.
We need to get some shirts made that just say Saint Lucifer on a man and really fuck with people, man, like big time.
That would be dope.
I know, fireman. People would be so messed up on both sides of the spectrum, but it would create conversation and it would make people dig into who this guy is. And he seems like a pretty dope motherfucker, man. Like, from all indications, he seemed like he would be definitely hanging out with us right now and talking about anti the system and what they're, you know, trying to brainwash us to think.
Yeah, hell yeah, dude. Saint Lucifer, man. He was a G.
Yes, he was, for sure.
Well, Eddie, I appreciate you jumping on, man. Before we get off here, you got to let everybody know where they can find everything. You know, we'll also have the links to everything, but let everybody know where they can find you on all the socials and everything.
Absolutely. You can find quickest way to find me is Instagram, Esoteric Eddie. All my, you know, larger content documentaries are on YouTube, Esoteric Eddie TV. And I'm on other platforms that I'm not too worried about those. But if you find me on them, cool. I also have a merch site, esotericeddie.com. It's just a little fun hobby. Sometimes I drop like different shirt ideas or T-shirts or hats and stuff like that on there. So that's pretty much it. Dropping a new book in September. Look out for that. It's going to be called The Anunnaki Theorem.
And I'm going to have, like I said, all your stuff in the show notes, as well as I'm going to post some of your videos. I'm going to take a couple clips and put them on Instagram, but I'm also going to put the full videos on Telegram. That's usually what I do, is get a little clip, because you know, you can't put it all on Instagram. So I'll put a little clip and then, you know, go over to the Telegram, go to Eddie's page, because I'm telling you, it'll really get you on the right track of blowing your mind a little bit. And
yes.
I will say, I read a lot of the comments on your videos. A lot of people were digging in. It was nice to see a lot of like-minded people that were really appreciative of the knowledge you were dropping, you know?
Hey, man, I love them, man. Shout out to all the supporters, all the mystics out there.
And then don't forget to like and subscribe and leave a 5-star review for Kill the Mockingbirds. You know, why the fuck not? I mean, it takes no effort whatsoever. You just go click. You know what I'm saying? Just put a like, yeah. Like, you don't even have to do a crazy comment. You'd be like, that's what's up. Or put a fucking emoji. You know what I'm saying? Like, make it easy. And you can find all the music at Sean Chris, Joel Thomas, Quan Duke, Van Tesla Music on all streaming platforms. Kill the Mockingbirds on all streaming platforms. Van Tesla Music, Instagram, as well as YouTube. And then there's Operation Kill the Mockingbirds on Instagram, as well as Kill the Mockingbirds on Telegram.
Yo, real quick, I'm going to give a little shout out to Jen Psaki. I've just figured out a way I'm going to get to her. She's not answering my calls and she hasn't been answering my text, but I'm going to astral project to her in that way. And I think in that way, she will know that it's on and popping.
Well, you know how we do it here. Wake the fuck up or get woke the fuck up. Are we out?
Brah, brah, brah.
Blaze down a dirt road. Feel the heat of the night. Which way do I go? Isolation, mountains in the distance scene. Trouble seems to follow me, that's why I pack my name. Orange mixed in the horizon, Texas margarita. This road is long, can't wait to put my feet on. I'm just existing, my thoughts conflicting, paradox shifting. What is resistance? What is transmitting? Always persisting, no coexisting, we're in remission. Be hard.